Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the wonderful United States of America, and I'm so excited as today we have another great show lined up for you. My name is Farrell DeLica, the host. It is November 13th, 2015. And today we'll be talking about So What? And you'd be like, what was the headline of today's show? It's entitled So What? The reason for this this headline for today's show is really talking about life. I truly believe we all know life happens to everyone, but I truly believe it's how you perceive life and how you take the lemons that life is giving you and make lemonades. I'm not sure why this topic came up today, but it was something that was mustered up in my spirit. And I think it is actually, for me personally, a transition and a transformation that's taken place in my personal life. So I'm really, really excited that we're going to be talking about how to overcome challenges in life and what you can do to overcome them. So as you all may or may not know, my name is Farrell DeLica. I'm the host of this show. And by profession, I was trained as a health educator and nurse, and I did seminary for 2.5 years. I'm a native from South Florida. And my story in the synopsis was I was very successful as a nurse in my 20s. I built a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath home in the suburbs of North Carolina. I was very active in my church. I was active in my school. I was attending seminary, which was in South Carolina. I was active in my HOA. I was active politically. I was active in my community. I was doing everything as I thought was the right path. That, you know, growing up, they said if you do things right and you follow the rules, then life will be great for you. And unfortunately, that was a rude awakening for a lot of us, not just myself or young people, but everyone across the country and even the world. In 2008, when the economic crash occurred. And what happened was, because a lot of people did not follow the rules, especially in Wall Street and the big banks, the individuals who received the repercussions for their wrongdoing were the consumers, were the homeowners, and individuals who were totally naive to the whole process, totally naive to the simple fact that you can trust your banks, you can trust your mortgage company. But, of course, that was not the case. And that was definitely an eye-opener personally for me. And as I experienced numerous hardships because losing my home and the financial burden that it caused, because I was a contractor, so I lost my job, and then I was sexually harassed in school, so I didn't attend school anymore, and then my finances were affected. I wasn't able to keep up my financial obligations. My health was affected. I had family members that passed away and other major family things that occurred, and so it was just a snowball of effect. And for a long time, I was very down and depressed. I couldn't commit suicide because I barely can kill a roach, so of course that was not the case. And I believe also what kept me from taking my own life was that I had a strong faith in God. And also I believe that God loved me enough to not allow me to take that step. Even though in hindsight or in the back of my mind it was a thought, but it was never something I could really do because I knew that there was more to life, and something in the deep part of me said that this too shall pass. It didn't feel like it would because it felt like I was in the darkest, deepest hole, and there was no one to help me. There was no one I could call upon because my family, I was isolated from my family. They didn't understand what I was going through. I was living in North Carolina by myself. My neighbors also didn't understand what's going on and kind of turned their backs on me as well. And then my church in Charlotte, North Carolina did the same. And then all my relationships began to be neither here nor there. It was all of a sudden they were just all severed. They just all stopped and everyone turned their back on me. And that was the loneliest time in my life because I was an extreme extrovert. I was always around people. I was always so sociable, friendly. Always had a big group of friends. People knew me. I knew people. So at this point in my life, I've never felt so alone. I've never felt so betrayed. I never felt so unworthy and marginalized. I felt like I was ostracized, like I was just pushed out into the world, on the dark side of the world. I was left alone to fend for myself. And at that point, I had nothing to help me fend for because I defined myself by my education, going to the University of Florida and graduating with honors, going into the University of Miami and graduating with a second degree. And at the time, I was pursuing a double master's in seminary and religious studies, pastoral counseling and theological studies. And it was all these different things that I couldn't define by my education. So my profession, I couldn't define it by a nurse, because when you tell people you're a nurse, it's a big accomplishment and people are so impressed, which I don't I don't blame them, because nursing school is not easy, and it is very academically draining and challenging and rigorous. So I couldn't define myself by my profession. I defined myself by my earthly possessions, such as my home, where I live, my zip code, because I lived in a beautiful new development out in the suburbs in a real nice area. It reminded me of a place where I grew up as a child. So I felt very at home. I felt very safe, and was familiar to me because it reminded me of my upbringing as a child. And so when I was on the verge of losing my home due to a number of things, mainly I believe it's the big banks, which that is another reason why I've become an advocate, is because of the experiences that I've faced in life, and we'll get to that portion of my story later. But when I lost my home, it was a hardship because I built the home from scratch, of course not me personally, but the builders built the home specifically how I wanted it to be built. It was everything that I wanted, because after graduating nursing school, my parents told me that I needed to buy a house. So I tried to buy a home in South Florida. It was too expensive. I never found anything I wanted. Then I was in Atlanta, and I looked for a home in Atlanta, and where I wanted to live, I couldn't really afford it because it was out of my budget and my price range. So, and I didn't want to live in the outskirts of Atlanta. I wanted to actually live in the perimeter. And, of course, people from the greater Atlanta area know living in the perimeter is pretty pricey, especially if you want to live in the Lenox Buckhead area. So then I took a travel assignment to Vermont to become a travel nurse and worked as in a correctional facility. And that was quite an interesting experience because I wanted to get away from my family. My family is very dysfunctional, and I didn't really get along with my family. And I just wanted to be on my own. I wanted to spread my wings and truly sever the cord, the umbilical cord, and be independent. So in doing so, I don't know why I accepted this assignment to be a travel nurse in Vermont at a male correctional facility at that, and I was in my early 20s. But it was interesting when I got that phone call that there was a piece in the conversation that I had with the recruiter. But in my mind, it was like, are you crazy? How can you work at a male correctional facility? You're a young woman. Something could happen to you. All these different things were running through my mind. But in my heart and my spirit, I was at peace. So I accepted the contract. And then as we were driving to Vermont 24 hours straight from Florida to Vermont with my father, my dad said I was going to be working in a hospital. So as soon as we crossed into the Vermont borders, he said, oh, so what hospital are you working at? And I said, I'm not working at a hospital. I'm working at a correctional facility, and it's a male correctional facility. And he almost flipped the car over. He was like, we're going back home. You are not working at a male correctional facility. So long story short, I took a five-month contract in Vermont and worked at a male correctional facility. And I had the best experience of my life because it helped me to be humble. It helped me to realize in the Bible, as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, it says, when you've done unto me, done unto the least of these. And I really didn't understand that concept. I did, but this took it to a different level. And really, it's a different world in the correctional facilities. It is the language, just everything. It's a totally different one, a correctional facility, and I was very afraid. So the first day I got on the job, they said that there will be a correctional officer with me at all times to escort me from unit to unit or location to location, especially that I had medications and syringes with me. And, of course, that was not the case when I came on the job the first day. I was devastated. I was so afraid of walking with syringes and medications in this container that was not even locked. It was like a plastic storage container. And I'm walking across campus, and I'm just thinking they're going to attack me to get these syringes or these medications, grab narcotics and all these different things. And it was nothing happened. So I was like, okay, this was maybe this time they didn't realize that I was walking across the field. So I said the next time. And of course, over time, it was really a community. It was a family. They were very supportive, very respected. They admired how I respected them. I called them sir. I treated them with the utmost respect because I wasn't there to judge them. All of us should be in prison for something. They just got caught. So I never really looked at it as I was better than them. I just wanted them to understand that I wanted to treat them with respect. I wanted to treat them that they were human beings, that they with dignity, even though there were times that it was very difficult working there. But overall, it was the best experience that I had in my nursing career. So then I left and moved to North Carolina. And when I moved to North Carolina, because I knew I did not want to move back to Florida, because like I shared not great relationships with my family, and my family is very dysfunctional, and just wanted to be in a place that I'm allergic to the sun, and South Florida is very hot all day long. Even now, it's November, and it's still 70, 80 degrees, so I have not been able to wear any boots yet, but I will make sure I wear boots before the winter season is over. Even if it's 90 degrees outside, I'm going to put my boots on, even if it's for 10 minutes, and say that I put them on and take a picture and then take them off so my feet don't sweat like a pool of water. So I moved to North Carolina. When I moved to North Carolina, I just had such a peace about me. I didn't have a job. I didn't know anyone there. I didn't know where I was going to live. I called my dad when my Vermont contract was over, and the correctional facility wanted me to continue my contract. But being the city girl, first of all, and being a Floridian, at that point, I never saw snow. I've never seen snow before. So I was at the bank, and I walk out of the bank, and these little white things are falling from the sky. And I was like, is the world coming to an end? And so I called my mom, and I said, something is wrong. I see these white things falling from the sky. And she was like, that's called snow. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I was like, wow. And the airport, remind you, the airport, Rutland, Vermont Airport, is the size of, I mean, like, it was the smallest airport I've ever seen in my life. And, of course, the planes that are taking you are like these small private planes that are going to fly you to Boston, which is the closest major airport to us. So, of course, the times that I needed to travel, I drove to Boston in order to fly out because I was not going to fly out of Rutland, Vermont. So when that happened, I knew that I wanted to finish my contract because I was living in the mountains and I didn't have a four-wheel drive. I had a two-wheel drive. I didn't have the proper tires to drive in snow, and they said the snow is very harsh. And so I moved to North Carolina. By moving to North Carolina, I called my father and said I'm moving to North Carolina. I'll meet you in New York, and we'll drive to North Carolina. And he's like, okay, fine. And no questions asked, didn't know what was going on. So we get in the car. I pick him up from New York. We get into the car driving to North Carolina. He's like, oh, so where are you going to live and where are you going to work? And ask me all the details. And once again, I gave him – he looked at me like, okay, you are one of my – you are the child that continues to be spontaneous. So I moved to North Carolina not having a job, not knowing where I was going to live. I had a lot of money in the bank, and I said, God will make a way. I just felt so much at peace knowing that moving to North Carolina would be my step, especially I've done my research. And the cost of living is very low compared to other places that I've lived. It's great for young professionals. It's the second banking capital of the country. The cost of living, housing, everything was great. So I said, okay, North Carolina it is. So moved to Charlotte. And within 6 months of being in Charlotte, I began building my home. And my home was everything that I wanted. It was everything that I was seeking to have in life. And so now I'm going to fast forward because I wanted to give you the positive side or the pre-economic crash and then now tell you what happened to the economic crash to me and then tell you how I overcame it because I truly believe things prepare us in life, whether we like it or not. And I truly believe that life is the best teacher. That's where you get the experiences of wisdom, insight, and understanding. And in the Bible, it says, ask for those things and you shall receive. So I guess I should have been careful for what I asked for because I wanted wisdom. I wanted humility. I wanted understanding. And I couldn't get it educationally through academia. It was more the intellectual process and theory and, you know, able to articulate things, but it really didn't give me the skills that I needed to survive in life because I really believe that to survive in life is the survival of the fittest. You have to have tenacity. You have to be just like a palm tree. You can bend, but you won't break. And that's what my quarter-life crisis, I said that was a time where I was bending in different directions, and then by God's grace, I did not break. I had numerous small meltdowns and nervous breakdowns, meltdowns, whatever you want to call them, and I didn't know how I was going to get out of this deep, dark hole that I was in. I had done everything the way I was supposed to. I tried to do my best to save my home. I reached out to so many services. I even reached out to governmental programs and assistance. And unfortunately, because the banks were not doing what they were supposed to do and they gave me false hopes, nothing came through. They didn't follow up with me. And it led me into having all this hope that I'll be able to save my home, I'll be able to find a position, because at the time I was a staff nurse, I was a contractor, and it was difficult finding a staff position because hospitals had freezes on their hiring because of the budget cuts and what was going on, the economic crash. So the hospitals and the healthcare system was also affected by that. So I was like, what do I do now? And I was at this point that life just kept doing a spiral downturn. By God's grace, I didn't use drugs. By God's grace, I didn't drink. I didn't fall into things that people tend to fall into when they have depression or when they fall into these crises in life. So it was just, I just moped and had a big pity party and stopped going to church and stopped talking to people because I felt like no one understood me. And people, you know, it's one of those things that people, you know, the saying goes, when you have when life is good, you have friends. When life is not good, then you find out who your true friends are. And at that point, I had no friends at all. Everyone had left me, even my family. And the only person I truly had was God. It was God that kept walking me through. There was nights that I would go to sleep and I would have the horrific nightmares to the point that I was startled and I would be afraid to go back to sleep. And yet there was still some small light, some small peace around me that kept saying, continue fighting. Do not give up. And my health was affected numerous times. I almost had life near-death experiences a couple of times for a number of reasons that they couldn't understand what was happening to me. I had ear infections, my appetite. At one point, my legs were swelling, and they didn't know why. And so it was like all these different health issues that were happening. I was healthy before this. And when I went to my doctor to explain to him, I feel like my body's falling apart, and he's looking at me like, okay, you're 20-something years old, what are you talking about? But I really felt like, as a Christian, I believe in spiritual warfare and spiritual attack. I believe that I was going through spiritual warfare as well as a quarter-life crisis. So all these things piled up on top of me really just took the life out of me. I didn't have joy. I didn't have peace. I didn't want to worship anymore. I didn't want to listen to Christian music. I didn't want to pray. I didn't want to read my Bible. All these things happened to me. I had a tea party for 5 years. And what was the straw that broke the camel's back was when a family member of mine who I was very close to, one of my spiritual fathers, one of my mentors, someone who really, I didn't realize how much of an impact he had on my life until he passed away, which was my uncle, who was a Catholic priest. He was a liberal theologian and fought for justice and fought for the rights of others. And he was considered Dr. Martin Luther King for his native country. And so growing up with that influence and the people that I've met presidents from around the world. I've met global leaders. I've eaten with global leaders. So I've met a lot of prominent people in my life. And so when my uncle passed away, I didn't realize he was preparing me for what was next in my life. And I say our relationship was like Elijah and Elisha. So if you are familiar with the Bible, or if you're not, Elijah was a prophet, and Elisha was his mentee, or his student that was also studying to be a prophet. And so Elisha was told by a group of people that today God is going to take your mentor, Elijah. And so Elisha would not leave the side of Elijah. And Elijah did everything he could, because I guess he knew something was going to happen as well, to not allow his mentee, Elijah, to see what was going to happen. And Elijah told Elisha that if you see me leave, you will have double portion of my mantle. So for me, I felt like that was the experience that I had with my uncle, having his double portion of his mantle, continuing on with the legacy of advocacy and fighting for the rights of others. And that's why I didn't want to get involved in politics, but realizing this is my family's history, this is my family's story, and understanding that through my family bloodline and my spiritual family line, of course, being a child of Jesus Christ or child of God and being co-heirs with Jesus Christ, was that I was meant to be a catalyst for change. I was meant to be an advocate. I was meant to for activism. And so when he passed away, I literally was broken in tears. And the reason why I believe I was so heartbroken by his death was because it was a conspiracy, because he was murdered by those that were closest to him. That's what I believe, because he was a healthy person and he had leukemia and he had a stroke. And prior to whatever happened to him, he was very healthy. The only thing he had was that he wore glasses. And so it was very heartbreaking to see someone who served God with all his life. He was excommunicated from the Catholic Church. He was betrayed by his family, probably some of his family members as well. He was betrayed by his followers. He was betrayed by all the people who he fought for, the people that he supported and he thought supported him, but in actuality, it was not the case. And so having seen betrayal in that way and then having being betrayed myself, it was just so emotional draining. I didn't think I would ever make it out of this dark circle, this dark hole that I fell into. But what I will say, after 5 years of being depressed and not wanting to live and moving back to South Florida and not wanting to do that as well, and when I moved back to South Florida, it was something I did not want to get involved in church. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to stay home, mope around, and kind of figure out prepare myself to move away from Florida again. And in doing so, it was just one of those things that I kept trying so many different things, and God kept saying, make the best of your situation. And I was like, how can I make the best of my situation? Everything has been taken from me. I've been betrayed. I've been lied on. My character has been defamed. So many different things have happened to me. How can I see the light at the end of the tunnel? And slowly but surely over time, God kept putting little things in my life to make me have life again. From being involved in Toastmasters, connecting with various people in the community, finding passion and hope again through the connections that I made through some of my mentors, finding a church that's biblically based and a pastor that believes, who was a great reflection of what God wanted me to see in him. Because I truly believe we never truly can understand God. As God says, his ways are not his ways, his thoughts are not our thoughts, his understanding is not our understanding. And so at that point, it was just a different perspective that God wanted me to have, a different way of looking at life. Because for up until that point, up until the economic crash, I would say I was blessed. I was spoiled because I've never had anyone tell me no. I've always achieved everything that I touched. Anything that I wanted to attempt to do, I did. And I guess my family and my parents spoiled me, and God had spoiled me, and so I became this spoiled, rotten child, I guess, at this point, and God wanted to show me that there was more to life, and it's not just about blessings, but it's how can we be a blessing to others, how we cannot live just for earthly possessions, but living a life of spiritual possessions, because if we live for the world, then we've lost our life, but if we're willing to lose our life for the world, then it's best that we lose our lives for Christ's sake as opposed to trying to gain our lives by earthly possessions. And so as I began to understand this, it was then that I started to realize that there is good in this situation, that in God's word, he said, he shall make all things shall work for the good of those that love the Lord, call him his riches and glory in heaven. And I said, how can you make good out of all that I've been through? I am at the point 30 years old, I've been through so much in life. I felt like I was tainted because of all the things that had happened to me. I felt like, you know, I was wearing the scarlet letter because I had lost my home. I was no longer pursuing my master's degrees. I had to move back to South Florida. I had to do all these different things that I would never see my life come to this point. But yet God said he will make beauty out of my ashes. And so I fast forward to say that in 2015, after going through all that, within the last 2 years, God has given me so much hope. God has given me so much understanding and insight on what has happened to me, that all the things that happened to me, whether it was my enemies, whether it was the devil, or whether it was just life, that I was able to understand who I was on the inside. I know my strength now. I know who I am as a person. No longer am I Phil DeLica defined by my career, by my resume, by my zip code. I'm defined by Phil DeLica by who I am, my character, my integrity, my faith and my walk with Christ. And so when we think about all the hardships we've been through in life, and I've met people throughout my journey of life, and it also prepared me to become a life and business coach, so I'm able to help people to overcome obstacles and challenges. I've met people who've been divorced. I've met people who've been abused in so many different ways. I've met people who almost committed suicide. I've met people who attempted to commit suicide. I've met people who've been orphaned. I've met people who've been abandoned. I've met so many different people in my walk of life up until this point that I'm able now to be a testimony to them, to tell them whatever happened to you in life does not define your future. It doesn't define who you are. Actually, it helps you to define yourself in a much brighter and bigger way. And so when I meet people, that's the word of encouragement I have for them. And the word it says, people say you can't be a test if you've never been tested. So my testimony comes from my test in life. My testimony comes from the challenges that I've been through in life. But now on the other side, gaining in my success as a life and business coach, as an author, a speaker, aspiring politician, aspiring attorney, is that now all that I've been through in life are my is my bag of skills, is my bags of challenges, is my bags of understanding, my bags of wisdom, my bags of humility, all the things that I'd asked God for many years ago. It was through those experiences in life that I was able to gain understanding, able to gain wisdom, able to gain insight and discernment, able to gain humility, because when we humble ourselves before him, he shall exalt us. And I see him exalting in so many ways, and I don't say this to boast or to brag, but I say this as an opportunity to realize no matter what you've been through in life, and that's why I say, so what? I don't care if you've been through the most horrific experience in life. It was there to build you up, just as they say, a diamond. A diamond is full of impurities. It's a diamond in the rough. It's full of so much dirt and impurities, and it's covered in all this earthing chemicals and beings or whatever. And so, but as it is refined through the fire, as it comes through the fire that the diamond has to go through is being purified, is being pruned, is being taken away those impurities, taken away everything that was making that diamond not shine its beauty, shine and show its light even brighter. And it's through the process of life as well that we are refined by our hearts. We are refined by the challenges we've been through in life, because now we're able to shine even brighter. And so that's why I say whatever happened to you in life, find the positive things in it. Don't be pessimistic. Be optimistic. Don't think of your glass half empty. Think of it half full. And ask yourself, with life, the lemons that life has given you, what kind of lemonade are you going to make? Of course, you can't make Fayola's lemonade because it's the best in the world. And I even say Chick-fil-A's lemonade is not even better than mine, which I thought it was at one point. But what kind of lemonade are you going to make? Are you going to make a lemonade that makes you joyful, that is sweet, that allows you to turn all your pain and sorrow into something beautiful? Or are you going to allow your lemonade to be sour and still mope around and wonder, why did this have to happen to me? Why did I have to go through these experiences in life? And so that's why I'm honored with the things that God has given me an opportunity to share my story, because I was ashamed about sharing my story for a long time. Because I said, how can someone who is so educated, who's done all the right things, find themselves in this situation? But yet, as they say, the saying goes, it wasn't a setback, it was a setup. God was setting me up for great things to come. And I know he's doing the same for you. Whatever your faith is, whatever you believe in, know that whatever you've been through in life was there to make you a better person, to show you the true version of who you are, the best version of you. Because sometimes the challenges in life actually lead us to our purpose. Imagine if I didn't go through those hardships in life, I still would be in North Carolina missing the blessings that are here for me in Florida. I would still be a nurse or attempting to be a nurse, despite God wanting me to be a politician and turning to be an advocate and be active in my community. Imagine if I still lived in North Carolina, I would be in that community missing out the relationships that I was supposed to build here, missing out the path that I was supposed to follow as my spiritual covering, missing the opportunities to be a part of the Christmas pageant at First Baptist Church of Fort Lauderdale, which is an Emmy Award-winning show. I mean, only God can do something like that. And so that's why I say, so what to life? And when life comes to show itself some lemons, you say, so what? And I'm about to make some good lemonade, the sweetest, best lemonade this world has ever seen. And so that's why I am honored that I was able to write a book, Resilience Living Life by Design, with Dr. Deanna Murphy and 12 other women around the country who had some challenge that they had to overcome in life. And so if you're looking for a book to read that would help you, especially if you're a woman who's a leader, who has leadership gifts, or you're a leader, this is a great book to read, as it's found on Amazon. You can go to my website, fayoladelica.com, fayoladelica.com, and you can order that book. And that book talks about my story, as well as all the other women in the book, their story of how they overcame those challenges, the things that they learned and the steps that they're sharing to help you to overcome that challenge. So truly, it's resilience. Realizing I can bend, but I definitely will not break. And not only that, I'm excited to say that if you truly are looking to transform your life and take your life to the next level, in December, December 10th, I have a class starting that I'm really, really excited about. It's starting on Thursdays. It's called Start Your Coaching Biz from Passion to Profit. It's an 8-week challenge online, It is 8 weeks that will turn your passion into a profitable business by giving you the tools that you need to become a successful startup business. And it's truly, if you want to be successful in business, it's about building a solid business foundation. So if you like more information about that, you can also go to my website, FayolaDelica.com. That's FayolaDelica.com. And that course is $697. And the true value of that course is $19.97. For any of my 8-week online training programs, the course alone is $19.97. But also there are some bonuses that are with this course. So if you are interested and would like to learn more about that opportunity, you definitely want to make sure you sign up on my website in order to get those bonuses, because the class does start December 10th with Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The 8-week program is initially $19.97 by itself, but I'm selling it for $6.97. And then you also get a lot of bonuses. You get a one-hour private coaching session a month after you finish the program, and another one-hour private coaching session 6 months after you finish the program. Now, the value of those coaching session is $100, and that's way below my normal rate. And so you also get a free complimentary copy of the Ultimate Coach's Manual, the How to Presenting a Professional Life Coaching Business. It's a 1-2-step A to Z of how to get your business started, whether you're a aspiring coach, a professional coach outside of sports, so a life coach, business coach, health coach, executive coach, a wellness coach, a wealth coach. So from A to Z, it gives you that, whether you want to start your coaching business or you're already there and you want to turn your coaching business to a more professional platform. Then the value of that manual is $197, but for $397, you get it with the 8-week program and the three bonuses, it's valued at $2,394, so $2,394. And I price pointed at $997, but I'm doing a special promotion for $697. So if you truly want to take advantage of this opportunity, definitely go to my website, FayolaDelica.com, FayolaDelica.com, in order to find out more information about that opportunity. That's going to start December 10th, which is a Thursday, and it's going to be every Thursday for 2 weeks, for 8 weeks for 2 hours starting 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's what I tell you all today who have been challenged with life. Find ways to take the lemons that life has given you and make some good lemonade. Make the best lemonade this world had ever seen. However you do it, whether it's to share your testimony, whether it's to be involved in ministry, start your own business, become a better person, or whatever that is for you, or even a better employee or a better manager or a boss or whatever, just find how to be the best version of you with all that you've been through in life, because it was there to sharpen you. It was your iron. Iron sharpened iron, and life was an iron to sharpen you to make you the best version of who you are. So no more pity parties, because after a while, the pity doesn't even come to the party. It's just you. And I had to learn that the hard way. So I guess today, November 13, 2015, God wanted me to finalize my transformation to realize no more pity party, no more looking back with doubt, no more looking back on life with the shoulda, coulda, woulda, and being depressed or even being disappointed by the things you lost. Look at the things you have now and the things that you will gain, because God said he shall make our ashes into beauty, and he's not a man that he should lie, and his word shall not come back void. So I stand in his promises. He told me 2015 would be the year of great expectation, and it accelerated starting in October, and I know that there's still much more great expectations to come before this year is over. And then he also told me in 2016 is the year of happiness. So however that looks, I receive. So let's get ready for 2016. Let's put aside all the things that life has brought our way and get ready to celebrate another year that's about to come. Don't wait till January 1st or December 31st to get your New Year's resolutions or to figure out what you need to do to have a great year. Start now. Let your tomorrow thank you for what you've done today. And 2016 is going to be an even better year. So let's prepare for it. So the best way I think you should do that is definitely by becoming a business owner. I truly believe that entrepreneurship is definitely the way to freedom and living life on your own terms. So if you are interested, my 8-week program, Start Your Coaching Biz from Passion to Profit, 8-week challenge online, taking place starting December 10th. Want more information? Once again, go to my website, fayoladelica.com, FayoladeLica.com. You can also follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So I'm just really, really excited that God is just preparing me for 2016 and to leave what was behind and keep stretching for what is ahead. So I pray the same for you. I wish the same for you. And I also pray, as we have a quick moment of silence, for another campus shooting, another tragedy that has taken place in our country. So a quick moment of silence before we end the show today. I pray for those families. I pray for those of the loved ones that were affected by the campus shootings that happened this week. We ask God that he covers his people and that we demand that our politicians make change the laws for gun reform. I called the president today as I was prompted by MoveOn.org to call the president and tell him to move forward with his gun reforms, and I challenge you to do the same. Call the president. Call your elected officials. Call your senators, your congresspeople, whoever you're elected, even at the local level. Start making noise at the local level that gun reform needs to change in order these innocent lives no longer be taken from us, especially for our young African-American men. So I just wish you guys all the best. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm excited this weekend. There's a lot going on, and if you are in South Florida, are you looking to find an annual event to take your family or yourself to for the holidays? The first Fort Lauderdale Christmas pageant starts November 27th is the first official opening night of the show, and it's going to be a treat you do not want to miss. So that is definitely an annual event that's taking place. This is the 32nd year that the pageant is taking place. This is my third year performing in it, and I'm honored and humbly blessed to be a part of this production that a church is putting on, and people compare it to Broadway and all the other great shows that happen, especially in New York, and they say that this is even better than that. So you definitely want to go ahead and get your tickets at ChristmasTix.com, ChristmasTix.com. So definitely get your tickets. Make sure you get the whole family aboard, and people come from around the world to see this show. So you should too. My name is Fayola Delica, the host of Finding Your Hidden Treasure. We are here every Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, in the wonderful United States of America. It was doing a little rain earlier today. I thank God because it's been hot lately. So I hope you enjoy your weekend and be safe. And we'll be back again next week, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Take care. Bye-bye.